Well, you know what we're going to do today? Hell is real. It's not a commonly held concept today, but it is. Hell involves two different ideas. There's an intermediate place called hell, and then there's an eternal place called hell. And what I'm going to do is simply define those today. So we're going to talk about this intermediate place, which I call a rest stop on the way to eternal death. And we say when people die, what, they've gone to their rest? And in a way, that's true. But the rest that people go to on their way to eternal death or eternal hell is not really a very good resting place. It wouldn't be like a place you'd really want to go. But in the Old Testament, there's a word called Sheol. In the New Testament, there's a word called Hades. And these are two different words, but they really mean the same thing, and they're translated in various ways. Sheol is translated as grave, or is translated as hell, or the pit. The word Hades is translated as hell in the New Testament, and generally that's pretty consistent throughout the New Testament, throughout all translations. Sheol and Hades are the same place, and you find that out when you compare Psalm 16:10 with Acts 2:27. Psalm 16:10, David writes, "You will not leave my soul in hell," that is, in Sheol. "Neither will you suffer thine Holy One to see corruption." Now, that's the body in the ground. I want to point out right here and right now, there's a difference between death and the grave and Sheol, or the place called hell. The place called hell is for the soul. Notice he says, my soul, my person, my life is in hell. When we die, we live on. But the body, it becomes corrupted in the dirt, eaten by worms, degraded by enzymes, it turns to dust. Because what did God say in the garden? If you eat of this tree, you will die. From dust you came, from dust you shall return. Now that's the body. That's not the person. The person goes to a place called hell. The body rots in the ground. So there's a difference between the grave as the tomb. Sometimes Sheol is translated as grave. A person goes down into the grave and is still alive. Well, the still alive part is this place that people are going to wait for final judgment. Now, Acts 2:27, Peter's quoting the Septuagint, which is a Greek translation of this Psalm 16:10, to take Sheol and translate it into the Greek word Hades. Hades is the word that's used throughout the New Testament for this intermediate state. And he says the same thing. "You will not leave my soul in hell," that is Hades, "neither will you suffer thine Holy One to see corruption." So Sheol in the Old Testament is the same as Hades in the New Testament. And sometimes the Bibles will simply translate the word Hades as Hades and not call it hell or the pit or the abyss. Acts 2:31, "And seeing this before," this is God through the prophets, David through the Psalms, the prophets, "seeing this before spake of the resurrection of Christ," because he says his soul was not left in hell or Hades, "neither his flesh or body did see corruption." So Jesus' body didn't decay. He was resurrected on the third day. His body didn't see corruption. His soul was not left in Hades. The Old Testament concept was there were two places in Hades. And there's an intermediate place in hell, and there's even a place for angels. And the New Testament is really the only revelation of this idea of a place for angels. There's New Testament Greek, it's called the abyss. And that's the Greek word, the abusan. And in New Testament Greek, it's also called Tartarus. It's translated as either pit or hell, depending on which version you have. Abyss is translated abyss, bottomless pit, or the deep. Tartarus is translated as hell in the New King James and in the New American Standard. It's only found in 2 Peter 2:4. In 2 Peter 2:4, it said, "The angels who left their first estate," this is during the time of Noah, "are cast into pits of darkness." And the Greek word pits of darkness is Tartarus. And so this is almost a word exclusively used for angels that are going to be held in this intermediate place until the final judgment. Say, what is the final place? We got this intermediate state. What's the final place? The final stop is eternal death. Now, where's that? Well, in the Old Testament Hebrew, it was called Gehenna, which became a Greek word, Gehenna. New Testament Greek then is Gehenna. Old Testament Hebrew is Gehenna. And in Revelation 20, John doesn't call it that. He calls it the lake of fire. Now, Jesus used the words, the fire that is forever, in Matthew 25:41, when he says, "I'm going to cast you into the place that was reserved for the devil and his angels, into a place of everlasting fire." And that's the way it's translated, everlasting fire. But he called it a fire that is forever, referring to the lake of fire, which John then reveals in Revelation 20. And the lake of fire goes on forever and ever and ever. And that's the final judgment. Now, here's an old graph I pulled up that I made back in the 90s when I taught Revelation years ago. And the reason I made this was to show people on kind of a pictorial way that the angels were, in fact, condemned to this lake of fire on the day that they fell. And so all angels are created here in Genesis chapter 1. There's a division between the angels that occurs right away when Satan decides, I want to take the throne of God. And he encouraged a significant number of angels. The book of Revelation tells us that there's a third of the angels followed him. And then there became what Paul called the elect angels. And then there were Satan and his angels. And then out of all the angels that fell, Satan and his angels, now called demons, become the active demons and the confined demons. And then you reach a point where the confined demons are confined in a temporary place, and I've just defined these things, the abyss and Tartarus. But the angels in Tartarus never get out. They end up in the permanent place. 2 Peter 2:4, Tartarus being their permanent abode until they get to the lake of fire. The confined demons who just are temporarily confined, they will also end up in the lake of fire. But between the confined demons, there's those confined temporarily and those who are confined permanently during this age until the lake of fire. Notice it says Satan and his angels. Those are the angels who followed him. On one day, they made a choice, and that was a point of no return for them. There is no redemption, no forgiveness, no turning back for a fallen angel. So angels were all created on one day, and they have been here since the creation of the world, and the angels that are surrounding us right now, both good and bad, are a lot smarter than we are. They've got thousands of years of experience that we don't have. They've seen all the stupidity and all the things that we can do over and over and over and over again, and we think everything we see is happening for the first time. It's not. They've been involved in every political kingdom, in every human activity since the beginning of creation. They've been the forces behind the kingdoms of the world, as we find out from the book of Daniel and from the book of Revelation. And there are good angels who are doing the bidding of God. They're the messengers of God. You see that very clearly in Gabriel, who comes to give the messages to not only Elizabeth, but Mary. These angels are real. And his angels, Satan's angels, are the forces that oppose us. They're the demons. And when did they become most active? When did they become most apparent? When Jesus came to earth in his earthly ministry. That's when you see the greatest demonic activity in the history of the world. Hasn't occurred before or since. Active demons, the ones that are not confined, they have access to heaven and earth. Satan had access to heaven. How do we know? The book of Job tells us that very clearly. Paul says in Ephesians 6 that we got to put on the armor of God. Why? Because we oppose the spiritual forces in high places. That the schemes of the devil are against us and we must oppose him. Who's he talking about? He's talking about Satan and his angels. Now, Satan, again, he's not infinite. He's not omnipresent. Satan is not a god equal to God himself. He's a created being. He can only be in one place at one time. But he has his minions that he sends out to do his work. There's kind of this modern notion that the devil and God are equal, and it's good and evil fighting each other out, and everybody wonders who's going to win. The reason we study the book of Revelation is so we get the end of the story. Is Satan going to win? No. In fact, one of the points we make is, what makes him go on and do what he does? If he can read the Bible, he knows he's beat. And he's smarter than we are, so he's got revelation. And he can read the revelation of the Word of God. And he still goes on to oppose him. There's something in his pride that says, maybe I can win. We remember from Revelation chapter 9, this angel comes out of heaven, opens the abyss, and lets these demons out loose onto the world during the tribulation. Now just think how mean these guys must be. They've been locked up in an abyss for how many thousands of years? And when they get out, they're released to do their destruction on the world. These are the most evil demons probably that exist that are going to be leashed upon the world. In Luke 8, there's an account where there's a crazy man. He's full of demons. The demons say, we are legion. And Jesus is going to cast out these demons. And they say, please, please don't throw us into the abyss. Well, why do they say that? Because those angels are locked up and can't get out. And at least these demons are free. So where does he throw them? Into a herd of swine. And what happens to the swine? Over the cliff, into the water, they drown. Much to the chagrin of the pig shepherd, whatever you call it, to the farmer that owns these pigs. He's just seeing thousands of dollars of his livelihood go into the drink. Now, where do the demons go?
They're free.
They're free. Right. They can go back into another guy or find somebody new to live in. And this is why these are active demons. And these are the demons that are still around opposing us. Now, are they as evident? Because who controls these demons? Who does Satan belong to, ultimately? God himself. They cannot go beyond the boundaries of what God allows. What about those in Tartarus? These angels are permanently bound in Tartarus until the lake of fire. These are the angels, Peter says, left their first estate and sinned unnaturally. Now, Jude alludes to the same thing. I think these are the angels from Genesis 6 who intermarried with the daughters of men. It so corrupted the race that God says, I'm going to destroy the race. And these angels were bound permanently. And so none of the free angels want to end up like these guys. When Satan and his angels sinned, they were cast to earth but still had access to heaven. What we find out in Revelation chapter 12 is that Satan and his angels lose access to heaven. And that's when they wreak their greatest havoc on the earth, is that last 3.5 years of the tribulation. Because when Satan is ultimately cast out of heaven and loses his access to heaven, that's when he enters the beast. And the beast becomes a satanically empowered tyrant to rule in the last 3.5 years of the tribulation. That's Revelation chapter 12, and the beast is Revelation chapter 13. So here's another look at it. Hell is Gehenna, is actually the lake of fire. The angels from the abyss and Tartarus are going to end up in the lake of fire, and men from Sheol and Hades are going to end up in the lake of fire. And so everybody, fallen angels, fallen men, are going to all end up in the lake of fire for eternity. Lake of fire and Gehenna are synonymous ideas. So the intermediate place, let's say what Hades is not. Sheol, Hades is not then, it's not death, it's not the grave, and it's not the final hell. It's not going into the ground. That's not Sheol. Though it sometimes seems to be expressed that way in the Old Testament, because they call it the grave. But that's what men see. They see the body going into the grave. They don't see what happens to the soul, to the life of the person. And it's not the final hell. The inhabitants of Sheol, Hades, are two groups of people. And this is Old Testament up until the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There's the wicked dead. They're in the place that we call hell. There's the righteous dead. They're in the place that we call paradise in Jesus' day, before he had risen from the dead. So here's the take-home on this. Before Jesus rose from the dead, the place dead people went to wait for their bodies to be resurrected had two separate compartments in one place. The one place they called paradise, the other they called hell, and that is Hades. Now the great parable that outlines this is Luke 16. Jesus is telling a story, but he wants to make a point about where people end up. Luke 16:19. There was a certain rich man, he dressed in purple and fine linen, gaily living in the splendor every day, and a certain poor man named Lazarus was laid at his gate, covered with sores, longing to be fed with crumbs. And it says in verse 22, it came about the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to Abraham's bosom. That, in the Jewish mind, was heaven or paradise. The rich man died and was buried, and in Hades he lifted up his eyes, being in torment, and saw Abraham far away and Lazarus in his bosom. So, and he's in torment. Now, the man at Abraham's bosom is being comforted. So Jesus is pointing out there's two separate places here. And in the Jewish mind, why would the rich Jewish man go to Hades? That wouldn't make sense to them. It wouldn't necessarily, would they say, that the poor man should not go to Abraham's bosom, but it really wouldn't make sense that the rich man would not go to Abraham's bosom. Well, he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Cool off my tongue. I'm in agony in this flame. Notice it's a flame of fire. But Abraham said, Child, remember during your life you had good things, Lazarus bad things, but now he's comforted here and you're in agony. And besides this, there's a great chasm fixed in order that those who wish to come over from here to you may not able, and none may cross over from there to us. There's two distinct compartments separated by a chasm. Now notice what the rich man says. Then he said, I beg you, Father, that you send him, that's Lazarus, to my father's house. Let him raise from the dead. Go to my father's house that he may warn them, lest they come to this place of torment. But Abraham says, no, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. So Jesus is saying, they're talking about me. So if they don't believe the prophets, and they don't believe Moses, and they don't believe me, they're not going to believe this guy just because he comes back from the dead. And of course, he proved that by what? Coming back from the dead. Did the Jews believe him then? the idea that they're entrenched in their ways. He said to him, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded if someone rises from the dead. So see, it all focuses on the Word of God. Two compartments. One is paradise, the other is hell. And remember when Jesus died on the cross and he said to the thief on the right, today you will be with me in
paradise.
Acts chapter 2, it says that Jesus, his soul was not left in hell. He went there and he freed the saved people from this compartment called paradise and took them to heaven. And that's where all saints dwell now who die. So this is before Jesus rose from the dead, but after Jesus rose from death, the place dead people now go to wait for their bodies to be resurrected is two separate places completely. It's not one place with two compartments. It's two separate places. The one we call with the Lord. The other we called hell, and that's Hades. This intermediate holding place. Now what happens to us is we receive an intermediate body, not related at all to the physical body that we had that's rotting in the ground. Because remember, the concept is the body goes into the ground, turns to dust. The person goes to either be with the Lord or to Hades. We are given an intermediate body while we're in this intermediate state. Remember when Jesus goes to the Mount of Transfiguration? And Peter, James, and John look up, and who do they see with him? Two people, Moses and Elijah. Now they name them, so they're obviously recognizable, but these men are not resurrected. They're still waiting for their resurrected bodies. These are Old Testament saints. So these are intermediate saints in the intermediate state waiting for their resurrected bodies. So what is a resurrected body? The resurrected body is the body that's in the ground. It's rotted. Or maybe it got buried in the ocean, got eaten by a fish. That body decayed maybe over thousands of years. That physical body is going to be actually resurrected, put back together, and given to the person waiting as a glorified body. The body that you have now is going to be resurrected after it rots and be reunited with your soul. And then that intermediate body is no longer necessary. That's glorification. That is resurrection. Revelation 20, verse 10. The devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone. There's where the devil ends up. That's clear as day. Why wouldn't he read this and understand this? Where the beast and the false prophet are also. They've already been there for 1,000 years. And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Just like the rich man in Jesus' parable. And I saw a great white throne and him who sat upon it and from whose presence earth and heaven fled away. So there's the end of heaven and earth right there. And then verse 12, I saw the dead, the great, the small, standing before the throne and the books were open. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to the things which were written in the books, according to their deeds. The dead, their bodies are coming out of the graves, being reunited with their souls. So now you have real people reunited with bodies that are now are going to be able to withstand the torments of eternity forever. That's a horrible thought. And of course, that's one of the motivators Jesus used in his ministry to say, you don't want to end up there. One of the motivators for salvation can be the terror of hell. Notice it says this, the sea gave up the dead which were in it, so people who weren't in graves but just got dumped at sea, and death, that's the actual tombs, and Hades gave up the dead which were in them. So there you have that distinction, death and Hades. That is, death is the physical part, Hades is the spiritual part, the soul, the life, brought together. There are going to be people at the great white throne are going to be judged according to what they've done, and the severity of their punishment will be equal to what they have done in their life, because God is totally fair in his justice. Because people will not suffer beyond what they have done in their lives. Notice verse 14, death and Hades are thrown in the lake of fire. The death, those bodies were in the grave, can be united with their souls from Hades. Everybody's going into the lake of fire. This is the second death. So the first death was your physical body dying and your soul going to Hades. The second death is your soul and body being reunited and now you're going into eternity. If anyone's name is not found written in the book of life, that's the other book that was there, he was thrown in the lake of fire. Now how do you get your name into the book of life? God puts it there before the foundation of the world. And then he calls you. And then you believe in him. And then he sanctifies you. And then he glorifies you. What am I going to say when I get to heaven? I don't think I'm going to be able to speak at all.
Me too. Hallelujah.
And of course, I did this one just for my wife. Welcome to hell. Here's your accordion. Well, we're out of time. Next time.